Would love your thoughts of how, maybe along the lines of the differences on what is happening in the blockchain social networks that could enable certain professions to further grow and to develop much faster if they focus on slightly different incentives.
Yeah, I mean, I think one important point to make is one of the reasons why the handle is not as important on kind of the TikToks and the Instagram reels is because your reach is not actually relative to who's actually following you. You're kind of beholden to the algorithm. So if the TikTok algorithm decides to make you really big that day, you're going to get really big. It doesn't matter what your name is. And I think a lot of young creators really leverage that, and they know how to kind of like play that game really well, and they do well. On the other extreme, kind of owning your brand, it's hard to tell what the future is of that, because like it's in a way, if you think about it, it's a very, very traditional thing to kind of own your brand. It's kind of like a luxury brand thing. It's like something people have been doing for hundreds of years, and the kind of Mick thing is very new. Where you have to kind of play the game. I think in many ways, the identity brand aspect of on-chain identities, for example, like ENS, it's like really strong sovereign ownership that you can rely on and build on and have a legacy for a very long time that can't be taken away from you. But if we're talking about how to make it in this market, that's kind of a different conversation too. So, to answer your question, like how does crypto compete? Is just like they have to build a large base of audience that they can route people to, or that you can earn. So it's just a matter of having a lot of adoption, I think. What do you think?
In that case, I absolutely would agree. But then the other question arises over there, and there's multiple things being tried, especially in Base right now, is how to bridge that gap from where people would join more of the, for example, Farcaster and the open social protocols, especially in times where it's a bear market in crypto, like, right, or it's like bearish, and the entire usage of even the very few users that are there even drops further.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the one interesting effect that we're seeing on kind of Farcaster and a Base is that creators can make it with a much smaller audience too. Like if you're on TikTok, absolutely, you need probably like millions and millions and millions of people engaging with you in order to kind of make any kind of living. Whereas on Warpcast, with their weekly engagement rewards, like some people are making kind of a few hundred bucks every week, plus kind of the idea is we want to build an economy where people are actively willing to spend money on each other, lower the threshold to buy things and like support people. So kind of build a very active economy. And I think that's something we're actually making a lot of advancement on. So I could imagine Base and Farcaster actually becoming these economic engines that where artists and can succeed with a much smaller audience too.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense actually, even for brand building, to start with that and to actually build up until a certain point. And then go to the next level and to build an audience that is strong with you and that is quite connected. So therefore, even a smaller audience goes a long way. And I believe we've seen that through multiple examples on Farcaster, actually.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we can imagine there's lots of different tiers of audiences, kind of the like high quality audience, which are happy to support you and spend money on you. And then like at the opposite extreme, we have a bunch of bots that are just like constantly spamming. And if you have millions of bots, that doesn't help you. You want as many of the kind of high quality people that are on your team. And I think like one way to attract the kind of high quality audience is to build high quality, reliable relationships. And I think that kind of brings us back to the idea of ownership. If you're on a platform that's constantly messing with your relationship with your audience, it's hard to kind of build that. If you're constantly losing your handle, you're constantly getting the platform, the algorithm one day decides you're not it anymore. They're going to just reroute everyone to someone else. It's really hard to build those kind of long-term healthy relationships that we want to have. And I think that's something that kind of on-chain things are able to do extremely well.
Yeah, I would say I would absolutely agree with you in that case. But also when it comes to, one of the main challenges also is that, yes, you could have a small audience, but on the other side, I would love to actually get your thoughts on, just in general, what could be some ways to, for example, bring more people into crypto social networks that will stay there to actually further develop and grow the community that is already built?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question that I think a lot of us have been asking ourselves for a long time. I mean, I'm generally a fan of doing everything. I don't think there's like one thing we should be doing and nothing else. So I'm very happy to see Merkel building Farcaster. I think they're doing a great thing. I'm happy to see Jesse build Base. I'm happy to see Lens. I'm happy to see Defi. I'm happy to see meme coins with like Glencore and all that. I'm just happy to see a wide variety of our experimentations, because my experience, the way to get people to move to another ecosystem is not through any one kind of killer app. I think we oversell on the like one killer app. I think the reality is we need like two or three things that you're just constantly exposed to throughout your lifestyle. It's never going to be one thing that you're just using all day, every single day. But it'll be two or three different things. And then on average, you'll be using one of them every day. And once there's a few things that are kind of keeping you there, then it becomes more and more sticky. If we rely too heavily on just one thing, I don't think it can be sticky enough, because people lose interest. Like another big thing comes along. So it needs to be more than one thing. So I'm always very excited to see a whole kind of massive diversity of experiments and ideas and different kinds of people. Like, I really like how NFTs brought in lots of artists and things of that. I think that's a whole ecosystem of people who are extremely different from the DeFi ecosystem, let's say.
Yeah, and then we had meme coins.
Yeah, which is also a very different ecosystem, yeah.
Exactly. One question over there is like, what kind of new developments are you mostly excited about from this perspective? What new trends and what new stuff do you think is coming up? Because it seems like it's been quite a while, where it's been kind of a stale period, even if you look at it in the company and utility space these past few months.
Yeah, I mean, one observation is that there's this high-level trend that a lot of industries go through, where they go through these massive phases of aggregation and disaggregation. Mm-hmm. So over kind of decades, things tend to kind of consolidate under one giant incumbent, and then something happens and disrupts it, and then it kind of splits up into lots of little ones, and then it kind of breaks up, and there's more interesting experiments happening all over, and then it becomes more obvious which ones are good, which ones are bad, and things kind of start to aggregate again and under a few incumbents, and then it splits up again. And it feels like we're on a disaggregation phase right now, where enough people have been, like, I don't know if I can say they were injured by X, but they're disenfranchised and want something different. But I don't think people are super committed to where they are yet. So there's obviously Blue Sky, Mastodon and stuff, but I think it's obvious that they'll have various different downsides. So we haven't reached kind of the aggregation phase yet, where everyone kind of aggregates under one thing yet. I'm still very hopeful there's like a lot of experimentation, a lot of opportunity still. But I think the best we can do is just like build things for the next phase so that we're ready when it happens, which might mean, yeah, I'm not sure what that means, but I think it might mean just like having a good usable experience that people are looking for other options. They actually have other options to explore. So like, for example, if people were upset with X, but there's literally no other option but to use X, then like, what are they going to do? But instead, there are actually a bunch of decent options now, and they still have growing pains and they still have a lot of issues to resolve, but they'll be resolved eventually. So yeah, it's good to be kind of ready.
But how does that change I'm really curious, like as an independent open source developer,
yeah,
how does that pretty much change your, how does that look like for you, like really the changes and everything that is happening?
Yeah, I mean, my general kind of high level philosophy of how I choose what to work on is I try to imagine the future that I want us to have. And then I kind of work backwards and try to to kind of understand why it hasn't happened yet. Like what's blocking it. So for example, let's say we want to have a more decentralized social network ecosystem that it embraces like small creators and allows them to thrive with smaller audiences, let's say. What would that require? And a lot of times to figure out what it requires, you kind of have to build it. So someone has to go and build it. And then they run into a bunch of issues along the way, which I think is what we're seeing with Farcaster. When they launched Frames V1, I think that was a really good idea, because they got the idea that like, okay, we don't have a massive audience, but if we can make our audience really high value, that's okay. So they launched this whole like frame ecosystem where you can do inline transactions in the stream. And that was working okay, but there was a lot of things people wanted to build that they weren't able to build because it required everything to be an image. So then they launched Frames V2, and now they're rebranding to mini apps. And the general theme is like, in order to have a high value audience, you need an economically active audience. And I think that's a really interesting observation that is likely very true, and also a strong kind of counterposition to what everyone else is doing. Like, I don't think, like in many ways, Blue Sky is the the antithesis of this, where they explicitly say it shouldn't have any cost to run a social network. They're not going to monetize it in kind of this kind of way. They might have some like premium tiers, but not in this way. So I think there's strong kind of positioning there. But we kind of have to just look at what's blocking the next step and just make it easier and easier to get to the destination that we want to reach. So a lot of time when I'm building open source things, it's because I wanted to build something else and I ran into issues along the way. Because like, this is way too hard. Like, I want everyone to be able to kind of build this thing. So for example, I'm working on WhatsApp API because I wanted to build these generative contract front ends. If Uniswap goes down, you don't need to use their UI. You can just like generate your own on the fly. And I tried to actually build that at a hackathon. And it was really hard because getting the API was annoying. Like resolving proxies was annoying. Encoding, decoding things was annoying. Just everything was really hard every step of the way. So I kind of wanted to make a library that just removes all the hard parts so that as many people as we can build the next step. And that's kind of a recurring theme that I've been using, is kind of build the thing you want to see in the world, figure out what's hard, solve the hard parts, and then let everyone else build what you want to see, because it'll be easy. And if it's easy, then everyone will do it. Like, you just kind of make it an obvious thing.
Yeah, that also makes perfect sense, because even when you solve the hard parts, you're actually making it really like an ecosystem.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
community could form around it that will further grow. As you said, other people will help you see what you wanted to see in the first place.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I think in many ways, kind of like the opposite of adding friction that we often do by increasing bureaucracy, or like anytime we have any kind of governance that we don't want to happen, we'll just like make it really hard. We'll just like NIMBYism and stuff like that. And this is kind of the extreme opposite of that. Like, make the thing you want to happen, just make it the kind of default thing. Make it really easy that anyone that is interested in trying making it happen, they'll just look and be like, yeah, this is easy, I'll do it. Yeah.
Is there anything else that maybe I should have asked you, but I haven't, that you'd like to share?
I mean, just a little bit of context, I guess. I wrote this blog post about how open social protocols can fail us. Where I tried to break down the differences between Mastodon and Blue Sky and Warpcast. And that's how this conversation started. But this is kind of a longer conversation that we all have been having for many years and probably will be having for many more years. And I think in some way, we just have to embrace that this is going to take many decades to actually reach our next evolution phase as a society. So on the one hand, I like the urgency and I love to kind of get the future in front of us as rapidly as we can. But on the other hand, I think we have to kind of have really long-term plans around these things as well.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. Like, especially, I know in your post, you actually had a very good breakdown of how each of the social platforms, like crypto social platforms, compare in different categories. One question that just popped up actually over there, like, one was, can my identity be taken away? But especially because each of these social platforms has their own protocol it runs on and everything. Even if I'd like to hear it from this perspective, because currently at the current state, and I'm playing a bit of a devil's advocate, but at the current state of the market, of like how big the crypto social protocols are, if just one client controls 99% of the attention and that client revokes your identity, then what happens in that case? Like, is it actual self-sovereign identity? Or because it has happened, or even what we were calling like jokingly the purge that happened a few months ago in Farcaster, right, when the bots were cut off, a lot of real accounts were cut off as well. So would love to hear your thoughts of how do you envision that to be managed? Because I believe it would definitely sooner or later start becoming a problem. Just because also with the increase of AI agents on social and everything that is going over there.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's kind of a recurring thought experiment that I always bring up, is that it doesn't matter how decentralized your underlying protocol is. If you have one dominant client that all the users use and rely on, it can overnight just swap out whatever blockchain they're using with an SQL database, and no one will even notice, right? Like, and probably for weeks, no one will, like, someone will be like, oh, my API is not working, what's going on? And like, oh, I'm sorry. And then weeks later, people are like, wait a minute. And then it's kind of a question of what's the incentive structure of people to create this massive coordination to move off of it, which is extremely expensive. And I think I think Warpcast recognizes this, and this is one of the reasons they're trying to onboard other major clients. Like, for example, Coinbase Wallet is integrating, which is going to bring in a huge user base. And when there's other large user bases and other large audiences, you can't just rug everyone. You have to kind of work with other multipolar companies to agree to some kind of rugging, which is much more complicated. But the other part that I also discuss in my blog post is the economic interdependence. Is if a lot of economic value that's happening on the network is actually also interdependent on the underlying blockchain protocol, then if you rug that, if you get rid of that, then the economic activity just disappears. That's actually massive damage. So it's this huge forcing function to stop that kind of thing from happening. And that's something that kind of Farcaster has that no one else has, in my opinion. It's not a massive amount, but there's more than zero. Whereas with Blue Sky, there's effectively zero economic activity happening there. I mean, like, there's probably some kind of out of band deals happening, but relatively zero. So the kind of recurring example is, if the main company that operates, the main client goes away, is there a strong economic force for someone else to kind of step in and host the infrastructure and continue to advance it? And if the infrastructure is really expensive, like it is with Blue Sky, and there's no economic activity, it's really hard to sell that narrative. No one wants to kind of step in and spend millions of dollars a month and get nothing in return. That's just like...
One question over there. Like, actually, I'm not very familiar with Blue Sky, so would love to see, to hear, like, how does it actually work high level?
Yeah. So it uses these immutable messages that are actually based on IPFS. The kind of encoding is inspired by IPFS. It uses CIDs to make content that... addressable messages, and that's the ATH proto that it's built on top of. So the underlying protocol is good, but the infrastructure aspects are kind of tricky, because from the top you have the app view, which is kind of the layer that's responsible for generating everyone's algorithmic timelines. And that means it has to have every single message in the system, all the history, and it has to generate a different timeline for every single user. Just a massive amount of infrastructure. It's really expensive to operate. And then underneath that, there's these relays. And the relays kind of accumulate data from all over the place, and they can feed it into the app view or to each other. They're basically just a way to kind of like federate messages. But all the messages are actually cryptographically signed, so it doesn't matter where they come from. They can come from anywhere, as long as they eventually get kind of aggregated into the app view. And then beneath the relay, there's the personal data server, which is basically, if you wanted to host your own data, that's what you would host. It's kind of a very small server that just has your data and kind of anyone else's data that you want to host, but usually just yours. And there's kind of the underlying signing key, which is usually included with the personal data server, that will cryptographically sign your account. And then if that key gets stolen or lost, you lose your identity, which is kind of tricky. And the other key thing is, on Ethereum, when you have your on-chain identity, you can do all kinds of interesting programmable security. So you can do social recovery, you can recover using email, using ZK email, for example, you can recover using a friend, you can recover using a custodian. Whereas if you have a philosophical restriction that you're not going to use a blockchain, then you're relying either on a centralized custodian to have your key, or you're essentially very restricted in terms of how you can solve that issue. Like, what happens when you lose a key, or what happens when someone steals your key? So it's still an unsolved problem in Blue Sky that I think they could very easily solve if they just embrace the on-chain life. But there's a strong kind of cultural issue there.
Blue Sky is by Twitter, no?
Blue Sky is by someone who worked at Twitter. I think she was the CTO at some point, but it's a completely separate organization that has a different disagreeing philosophy with how X is being run. So I wouldn't associate them very strongly. And they do have experience with Bitcoin and like IPFS and stuff like that. So I don't think they're completely ignorant of the existence of these things. I think there's just a strong kind of cultural bias of their relatively massive user base.
What about Mastodon or Lens?
So Mastodon is... uses a different federated model where there's usually, so you can self-host your own instance, which is fine, but it's annoying. Out of the many millions of users that they have, there's only, I think I have a note here, how many instances? 8,700 instances out of 9.5 million users that are registered.
So 9.5 million, quite big.
And roughly 1 million monthly actives, which is actually not bad. Most of the users are in the top few instances. And if the admin goes rogue or the instance goes down or they get bought by like another billionaire, everyone on that instance loses everything. So it's not a great model in terms of ownership. It's kind of like having lots of little Twitters instead of one big Twitter. So yeah, it still has risks, but people are using it and it has a different design model. And then Lens is kind of the opposite extreme.
Go ahead.
Even though I have not used it much, my understanding is it's Lens is mostly happens on chain. So you're rather than in Farcaster, your identity is on chain, but your interactions are essentially off chain. In Lens, your identity is on chain and your social graph is on chain, I believe. And maybe even the messages are on chain. I'm not sure. But the kind of main differentiator of Lens is they really wanted to have an on-chain graph of people following each other. So you could use that with other applications as well.
When it comes to the audiences of these different platforms, how do you think they compare? Like if you've ever used some of them, like for example, Farcaster is a lot more builder audience and like practically people that it's like builder communities. And then you have these different interest communities. But to be honest, like most of the active users on Farcaster are they're building something or actively working on the ecosystem, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, something with Mastodon or Lens, if you've ever used any of them or Blue Sky, how does that compare? Like, is it really niche communities or builders as well or something completely different that is happening over there? Especially if Mastodon has like a bunch of little Twitters, I would assume they're quite different. Like, if you're looking into it.
I don't think there's a super fair way to kind of generalize everyone's audiences. I think you're right that a lot of kind of Farcaster people, for frame of reference, Farcaster has maybe 20,000 monthly actives or so. I don't know off the top of my head. Like maybe 40 on the high end. And yeah, it kind of depends on what the algorithm is doing that day. Like to me, it feels like my audience is the same, like, the same 60 people that were there from the start. And there's new people that come in every once in a while, but it doesn't feel super, super varied. Whereas the ops, like Blue Sky, I think is largely a massive exodus out of X. And they have around 35 million users, maybe 40 million. I think about like 10 million or so are active. So it's pretty big. It's probably the next biggest one. It's definitely bigger than like Mastodon, but there's a very small crypto community, extremely small, in part because there's these block lists that labelers, which are just like random people, can automatically put people on, and they have a really aggressive labelers to label anyone that even remotely mentions anything crypto, and then they automatically get blocked by a bunch of people. So it's a very different culture in that respect. There's all kinds of creators and journalism happening there. Like I think it's a healthy ecosystem that's large, but they definitely have a different culture. And then Mastodon also has like lots of little fiefdoms. Like for example, Truth Social is actually a like stripped down Mastodon instance. So there's like neo-Nazi Mastodons, there's like furry Mastodons, there's like artist Mastodons, there's open source. There's one that I've been on two Mastodon instances. One was a crypto-based one made by the founder of Flashbots that randomly one day just like stopped working, and I lost everything. I lost all my followers. I lost all my posts. They're just forever gone. And now I moved to the open source one, Mastodon. And now they're also talking about maybe shutting down. So whichever instance you decide to join, don't join the one I'm on. Have a very bad record. Yeah, I don't know. I don't see Mastodon as being kind of the ideal end state of these kinds of social networks. I see Mastodon as a protocol more aligned as something like subreddits. So if you heard of this Reddit alternative named Lemmy, it also uses Mastodon underneath. And I think that kind of model aligns more with what it actually is in terms of each subreddit actually owns that instance. Like whoever operates the admins of the subreddit owns a subreddit. They can do what they want with it. They can get rid of the users, they can get rid of the posts, they can moderate however they want. And that's what Mastodon is. Whoever owns the Mastodon instance, they can do whatever they want on it. So I feel like in terms of the intuitive mapping of ownership, it's kind of more aligned versus a one global social network. It's not intuitive that it has these kind of consequences. So I think Mastodon has a role to play, but I don't see it as the desirable end state of a global social network. Whereas Blue Sky, I feel it's much more reasonable. It's well-architected. I feel like it could really benefit from a few small on-chain elements. We'll see if they ever get there. I don't know.
What about Lens, though?
Right. Lens, I honestly haven't looked at it in a few years, so I'm not...
I haven't even heard lately much about Lens.
Yeah, I remember back in the day, they had a very big NFT community, and like people who used it really liked this kind of smallish ecosystem they had, but I tried using it a few times and never really built an audience on it. So honestly, I'm not sure. I would love to hear about it if someone else has experiences to share that are more recent.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing some perspectives on the other platforms, though.
Yeah,
that was awesome. It was a pretty interesting breakdown because it's each of them has their own focal point and their own philosophy and stuff. And looking at it from another perspective, like it seems out of all four, Farcaster might be the one that's the perfect balance, or at least close to the balance of it.
If I had a magic wand, I would love a hybrid between Blue Sky and Farcaster. I think they both have really good ideas, and if they just borrow all the good ideas from each other, we'll have something very near what we want. But instead, I think we have to make it there through some hard lessons.
What do you think are some of those ideas that could be beneficial for each?
Yeah, I mean,
some of the things that you like.
I like the proto design. I think there's a lot of people building interesting things on it. So basically the kind of message schema where you can add your own namespaces to it, and it's all like cryptographically signed. But I like the on-chain aspects of Farcaster. I think it allows us to do more with key recoverability while still have real ownership. And then also I like how incremental the architecture of Blue Sky is, even though it's extremely expensive to operate at the highest level. The lower level kind of architectures actually make a lot of sense. The kind of the like personal data server and the relays. I would love to have something of that for Farcaster without having to operate a full node, which is kind of the only option right now. Like, for example, I'd love to be able to just sync my own casts and my own data and kind of have it as a backup easily without having to get everything. But in general, I think Farcaster people underestimate how much people are experimenting with that proto and what kind of interesting things they're building, because I think they are doing a lot of interesting infrastructure experiments. Whereas I think Blue Sky is probably not aware of our ecosystem at all, but they're also probably vastly underestimating the economic experiments that are happening on like Warpcast. And I think those are very underrated. I think they'll increasingly become more important as a category.
Yeah, definitely something to look into and take into consideration, especially if you're a builder on Farcaster. Andrey, it was an absolute pleasure. Thank you for sharing all these insights and interesting takes on these topics.
My pleasure, Chris. It's lovely to chat.